Hello and welcome to this podcast focusing on newly diagnosed multiple myeloma. In this episode, which includes excerpts from a recent educational symposium, Drs. Mohamed Moti and Serbi Sidana discuss recent clinical trial data as well as current and emerging therapies. This activity is provided by PER and supported by an educational grant from Sanofi. First, we will hear from Dr. Mohamed Moti, who will discuss key clinical trials and therapies for patients with newly diagnosed transplant-eligible multiple myeloma.
The early era of modern therapy of multiple myeloma, namely 60s, 70s, and early 80s, was actually dominated by conventional chemotherapy. And the major breakthrough in the field of multiple myeloma was actually seen in the early 90s with the advent of high-dose melphalan and autologous stem cell transplantation. This has been a true revolution in the field of multiple myeloma, and almost 40 years later now, we are still actually discussing the crucial role of autotransplant and high-dose melphalan in myeloma. We had to wait for another 10 or 15 years before we see the advent of two key families, namely proteasome inhibitors and IMiDs. Then in the early 2010-2012, we had the so-called second-generation therapies, second-generation proteasome inhibitors, second-generation IMiDs, but also in the mid 2015-16, the introduction of key molecules, monoclonal antibodies, especially the anti-CD38 monoclonal antibodies like daratumumab and isatuximab. The last 5 years are completely dominated by the immune therapies targeting T cells, especially CAR T cells, but also bispecific antibodies, but also some smaller molecules with specific mechanism of action like selinexor or melflufen, but also very recently the antibody drug conjugate. But despite all this, I think many of us continue to believe in the value of autotransplant. Just a historical reminder here, showing you the key randomized trials which have established actually the role of autotransplant and high-dose chemotherapy in the field of multiple myeloma, showing higher CR rate, higher event-free survival, but not all studies showing an overall survival superiority. This is the first trial, which was a turning point, the IFM trial, IFM-94, from the IFM group, from our group in France, but also this trial tested the proof of concept, the feasibility and the value of a second autotransplant. Because remember, in the 90s, the only active drug we had was melphalan. In the most recent era, actually, the field has moved forward because in addition to high-dose melphalan, we were able to use better and more effective induction treatments prior to transplant, but also better treatments after transplant for maintenance. And again, the modern era, the last 10, 12 years, were dominated by the results of the so-called IFM 2009 and determination trial, testing VRD auto maintenance versus VRD without auto and maintenance. But also, and this is really the most recent data that paved the way to the role of quadruplets in this field, the Cassiopeia trial, with the introduction of anti-CD38 monoclonal antibodies for induction. And you can see the results that we are able now to achieve with a quadruplet induction, the first generation, I would call it the DARA-VTD, daratumumab, bortezomib, thalidomide, dexamethasone, not only in terms of PFS, but also an overall survival advantage. And with this kind of results, 84 months median PFS, you would imagine that the survival of multiple myeloma patient has nothing to do today with what we used to see 20 years ago. And this is reflected actually with the most modern scenario, most modern approach in those patients who are young and fit. And this is about the PERSEUS trial. The PERSEUS trial is a key milestone, I think, in myeloma therapy and in the use of transplant. This is a trial which tested the classical sequence of induction with VRd bortezomib Lendex, followed by transplant consolidation and maintenance with lenalidomide single agent versus a new, more potent regimen, very modern, incorporating anti-CD38 monoclonal antibodies with daratumumab VRd at induction, transplant, but also daratumumab VRd for consolidation, and daratumumab lenalidomide actually for maintenance. And this is adjusted then on the MRD. And I'll come back to this. And these results are quite astonishing, showing an 84% progression-free survival at 4 years for the quadruplet arm. And although the data are not mature for overall survival, but you can see the shape of the curve when a quadruplet-based strategy is being used. And there are abstracts already presented in different meetings, but also in upcoming meetings, showing following a sort of a speculative scenario that maybe the median PFS for those patients with standard risk myeloma treated within PERSEUS trial in the experimental arm is likely going to be above 15 years. And this is of a great benefit to all subgroup because in all pre-specified subgroups, there is a clear advantage in favor of using a quadruplet induction. We have similar results, very potent activity when you use the other approved anti-CD38 monoclonal antibody, namely isatuximab, which has been also combined with VRd in this HD7 trial, which was reported and published very recently by Dr. May and colleagues from Germany. And you can appreciate the design of this trial, the classical induction VRd versus isatuximab VRd, followed by high-dose melphalan. And the beauty of this trial is about the comparison head-to-head between lenalidomide single-agent maintenance versus lenalidomide plus isatuximab. That was slightly different in the PERSEUS trial. And here you can see the power of a quadruplet-based induction because 50% of the patients who receive a quadruplet induction with isatuximab VRd are going to be MRD negative at the end of induction. And this is before transplant. Half of the patients are already in deep MRD negativity. And you can appreciate on the right-hand side the PFS curves. We can push this quadruplet induction into a higher level by replacing the first-generation proteasome inhibitor with a second-generation proteasome inhibitor, namely carfilzomib. And this is the ISCHIA trial using isatuximab KRd compared to KRd. The results of this phase three randomized trial were presented in the presidential session at the ASH 2023 annual meeting. And you can see here again the impressive level of MRD negativity achieved after induction, 45%, 64% post-auto, and 77% post-consolidation. So clearly, the new combinations with these novel agents are leading to a very deep response rate. And we know very well, and we will discuss it, I think, the value of MRD negativity. So with this such high level of deep responses in transplant-eligible patient, the obvious question you may ask, Can we use actually the MRD level to guide the strategies? And we're lucky the community embarked on this effort trying to use MRD, but also incorporating MRD testing as part of prospective trials. You can see here a non-comprehensive list of the major trials which incorporated MRD and tested MRD after induction. We may argue about the threshold, the technology, but at the end of the day, with some of the modern regimens like the HD71 with isatuximab VRd, or the IFM 2020 MIDAS trial with isatuximab KRd, we are around 50 and more than 60% MRD negativity. And we owe some gratitude to Dr. Costa and colleagues who pioneered for the first time, tried to establish the proof of concept of MRD guided modulation or discontinuation of therapy in a newly diagnosed multiple myeloma patient. And they have used daratumumab, carfilzomib, lenalidomide, dexamethasone for induction, followed by OTO. MRD was measured. And to make a long story short, because this study has been publicized several times and published several times, we know that maybe despite MRD negativity, and this is a great teaching from this study, this proof of concept, we should not maybe stop early treatment despite achieving MRD negativity. A single point. We will debate, I think, sustained MRD negativity. That's exactly the approach that was adopted by our IFM group in this so-called MIDAS phase 3 randomized trial, which is the MRD adapted strategy. And you can see the schema of the protocol, very strong induction with isatuximab KRd, 6 cycles, assessment of MRD at the end of induction, then randomizing patient into standard risk versus high risk, but based on MRD, a dynamic assessment of actually the risk of the disease. And if you are standard risk, then you are and MRD negative, then you are randomized with or without OTO. But obviously, even without OTO, these patients are receiving a very powerful combination with ESA-KRd followed by 3 years maintenance. And if you are high risk, actually the randomization is about a single OTO plus the quadruplet versus a tandem OTO. The first results of this trial were already presented and recently published in Blood by Dr. Perrault and colleagues. And you can see here that we have a very high rate of MRD negativity after induction, whether you consider the 10 minus 5 or 10 minus 6 sensitivity profile. And you will hear more about these results in the upcoming ASCO meeting, and hopefully they will get published very soon. And I'm very excited about these results. When it comes to MRD guided treatment, we may wish to guide the use of maintenance based on MRD. And we have another example from the PERSEUS trial where the doublet maintenance was actually used in the context of MRD assessment. And to make a long story short, a patient would receive in the experimental arm of the PERSEUS trial that I have shown you earlier, daratumumab plus lenalidomide, and depending on the MRD status after 2 years, they may switch to a single agent or continue on a doublet. And you can see here in this PERSEUS trial, in the maintenance phase, actually, there is a great value for the doublet maintenance because it allowed to increase the rate of MRD negativity. And this is the reason why the EMA, the European Medicines Agency, has approved recently this PERSEUS schema from induction until maintenance. Well, the FDA had a different perspective when it comes to this trial. So I hope I have convinced you that The treatment landscape of newly diagnosed multiple myeloma patients who are young and fit has dramatically and significantly changed to the better in the last 20 years, thanks to the introduction of anti-CD38 monoclonal antibodies, whether as part of induction with Dara-VRd or Eza-VRd, Eza-KRd quadruplet regimen, but also as part of the maintenance therapy. And I think trials like Perseus, like the HD7, are really a turning point in our field. Obviously, the MIDAS trial looking into the MRD-guided treatment may provide additional perspective on whether we would like or not to skip autotransplant in some patient. And at sometime we may regret the heterogeneous design of these different trials, but in this situation, I believe all of these trials allow to provide very meaningful and important information. And if I have to summarize the current approach in transplant eligible newly diagnosed multiple myeloma, I believe, and these are the recommendations to be published very soon. They are already in press from EHA and the European Myeloma Network. You can appreciate that we have a very high level of evidence for quadruplet induction with isatuximab VRd, daratumumab VRd, or even first, if the first option are not valid, to use thalidomide with Dara VTd, followed by transplant, followed by consolidation with the same quadruplet, but also double maintenance.
Now let's shift our focus to patients with newly diagnosed multiple myeloma who aren't candidates for transplant. Dr. Serbi Sidiana walks us through important new developments for this population.
And so, you know, for a long time, we had a lot of things moving in the transplant eligible space with quadruplets and not so much in the transplant ineligible space. But I'm happy to report that since last year, we have a lot of data that we will talk about in the next 20 minutes. So, that is me. So the objectives would be to review the current standard of care, how we got here for transplant ineligible, including transplant deferred, and then review emerging evidence with quadruplets for fit patients who are either ineligible or choose to defer a transplant. And then, of course, frailty is important, especially we think about transplant ineligible patients, so review outcomes in frail patients with established and emerging treatment regimens. So these are our established standard of care regimens that the audience here is very familiar with. We have DRD, daratumumab, len, dexamethasone, based on the MAIA trial, which we'll talk about. We have VRD, bortezomib, len, and dexamethasone, based on the SWOG777 trial. And then many of us use a twist on VRD, the VRD light, with less intense bortezomib and lenalidomide in longer cycles. Of course, some of us have our ultra-frail patients who are 90-year-old. Many of us choose to use doublets there, although for many patients, we can use triplets. I'll share some data about that. And then the bulk will be focused on emerging data with quadruplets, just like we had in the transplant-eligible patients. So no presentation for transplant ineligible or deferred is complete without the SWOG777 trial, which was designed in 07, 2007. That's what the number stands for. And it included patients with newly diagnosed myeloma who were either ineligible for transplant or deferred. And this is the trial that established the triplet as the standard of care, the VRD triplet. And patients were randomized 1:1 to VRD versus RD, and they all got maintenance lenalidomide. Now, it's important to note that most of these patients were younger. 57% were less than 65 years of age. So this is not truly a transplant ineligible population, but more so a transplant deferred population. And so you've seen these slides. PFS was much better with VRD, and there was an overall survival benefit as well. The median PFS with VRD was 41 months compared to 29 months with the doublet. And even in the older patients, even though they were just a subset of the patients, so patients above 65, and one would say patients up to the age of 70 are transplant eligible, at least in the US, but patients above 65, there was PFS in favor of VRd, so the true less fit transplant ineligible patients. Then we have adapted VRd to VRd Lite, adapted for older adults. And this is coming from a phase two trial from MGH, in which patients who were more than 65 years or ineligible for transplant were considered. And the twist here is instead of the Len 25, Len is 15 milligrams. Bortezomib is once a week sub-Q, and there's a week off. There's less dex, especially if you're above 75 years of age. And then they got consolidation Len index, and then optional long-term maintenance. The median PFS here was 35 months. So even in this older population, when you compare it to 40-some months with VRd conventional, 35 months. So these patients were able to tolerate it very well. And importantly, the grade 3 neuropathy, which is an issue with bortezomib, was only 2%. Again, here they use sub-Q except for a couple of patients in the beginning where they used IV. And it was weekly instead of every twice a week, 1, 4, 8, 11. But things really didn't move for many years till Maya came along. And Maya has truly changed the standard of care in transplant ineligible patients. So this is a large randomized trial of an anti-CD38 antibody in combination with Lendex. So patients were randomized 1:1 over 700 patients to dara-Lendex versus Lendex, and stratified based on different risk factors, including age. But this is a truly transplant ineligible population. The median age was 73. There were a few younger patients, but the median age was 73, and 99% of patients were above the age of 65. And the primary endpoint here was PFS. Responses were much deeper with DRd versus RD. Overall response rate was 93% versus 82%, and CR rate was 51% versus 30%. You know, MRD, which we saw a lot of this data from Dr. Mothi's presentation, wasn't achieved as much in this population. So 32% with DRd compared to only 11% with RD. And this is a provocative question. Is achieving MRD as important in this population of older adults in their 70s as it is in transplant eligible patients? I mean, this is something we can talk about later during our discussion section. The PFS, I mean, you could drive a truck through that PFS curve. The PFS was much superior in the DRD arm at a median of 5 years versus the RD arm, 34 months, so a little under 3 years. So PFS difference of 2 years with the dara triplet. And there's also an overall survival difference. And this is something we see less and less of now with all the different treatment options, but especially in these older patients where you may never get to a good second line therapy, right? You never want to, you know, keep LeBron on the bench in the beginning, both for transplant eligible and ineligible. But this is particularly very important in patients who will probably not get a good second chance. So there was an overall survival advantage as well with the triplet with daratumumab. There are some safety trade-offs. Overall, many of us know that it is fairly straightforward to give dara and len, but two things to keep in mind. Patients on the triplet did have more grade 3 and 4 neutropenia compared to the doublet, 54% versus 37%, and a higher risk of infections, particularly respiratory infections like pneumonia. So those things we do need to keep in mind, but overall the safety is fairly manageable. And even in the truly older patients, patients who are above the age of 80, and one would say that this is a population we would never have thought about using triplets 5, 6 years ago. Here, the median PFS with dara-Lendex was 52 months, so a little over 4 years versus only 30 months with RD. So that benefit is true even in the truly older patient population as well. And when we look at frailty, and this was a post-hoc analysis when patients were qualified based on the frailty score into fit, intermediate fit, and frail. And the response rates were higher with DRD across all frailty groups, and the PFS was also higher with DRD across all frailty groups. We do have to consider, again, the higher risk of neutropenia and pneumonia in frail patients with DRD, but as long as we are aware and know to manage and intervene early, I think this can be given safely. Now, we do have to treat it with the caveat these were still trial-eligible patients, so there might be a certain subset of patients in our clinic who are ultra frail, who are not even trial eligible. I think that's a discussion to be had based on each individual scenario. But now, truly, for the past year, we have seen amazing data that I will share with you, and we are entering the era of quadruplets, even in transplant ineligible and, of course, in transplant deferred patients. So we had data presented from the Cepheus trial at the IMS 2024 meeting from Dr. Usmani, and this has been published in Nature Medicine, in which patients who are transplant ineligible or transplant deferred were randomized to either VRD or the quadruplet with DARA VRD. And then patients continued for the VRD arm on len maintenance and on the DARA VRD arm on DARA len maintenance with dexamethasone in both arms. The primary endpoint here is MRD negativity. So not PFS. They didn't look at PFS, but the primary endpoint is MRD negativity. And so these are the baseline characteristics of the patients. And you can see here, the median age is 70 years of age. And about over half of the patients, 55% of patients, were above the age of 70. Now, 20% of patients were under 65, but the majority are above the age of 70. There are fit patients and there are intermediate fit patients. About a third of patients are intermediate fit, and about 15% of patients have high-risk cytogenetics. So the primary endpoint, as I said, was MRD negativity at 10 to power minus 5, and the trial did meet its primary endpoint and led to deeper MRD responses at both 10 to power minus 5 and 10 to power minus 6, which is what is more important clinically, I would say, and I agree with what Dr. Mothi said earlier, and sustained MRD negativity, because we know those patients do the best, the ones that have sustained MRD negativity. And sustained MRD negativity rate was over 20% better with the quadruplet arm in this transplant ineligible and deferred population. And while PFS was not a primary endpoint, this trial clearly showed that PFS was superior with a quadruplet, with PFS at 54 months being 68% versus 50% in the VRD arm. So again, median has not been reached yet, but significant superiority with a hazard ratio of 0.57 in favor of the quadruplet here. In terms of safety, again, similar signals as we've seen with all of the DARA trials. There was an indication of higher grade 3 neutropenia with the quadruplet, higher thrombocytopenia, and slightly higher risk of infections. But overall, those of us who know how to manage this in our clinic population, and we're all very familiar with DARA, I think this is a regimen that can be safely given to patients as long as they're not ultra frail. Then we have the IMROSE trial, which uses isatuximab VRD versus VRD. And again, the only difference here is that the randomization was 3:2, and we're using isatuximab instead of daratumumab, which was used in the Cepheus trial. They were patients under the age of 80, and these were transplant ineligible patients, slightly different dosing with isatuximab. The primary endpoint here is PFS. The secondary endpoints included MRD. And so this is the population. The median age, similar to what we saw in Cepheus, is over the age of 70, 72 years of age. Many patients, and I would say here, even further patients are more than the age of 70. 40% patients are between 70 and 75, and a third of patients are between 75 and 80. And so here's the data for efficacy. The quadruplet clearly had better efficacy, with five-year PFS being 63% and hazard ratio of 0.6 in favor of the quadruplet ESA-VRD. Overall response were high in both patient populations. Overall response is similar, but the responses were deeper with a higher CR rate of 75% versus 64%. And MRD was also in favor of the quadruplet, with ESA-VRD having a higher MRD negativity rate. What about safety? And I think this is a pattern. This is consistent. We saw higher grade 3 neutropenia and thrombocytopenia with the quadruplet and higher risk of pneumonia. So very, very similar pattern like we saw, but otherwise it was well tolerated. So based on the IMROS trial, FDA did approve isatuximab VRd in patients who have newly diagnosed myeloma who are not eligible for an upfront transplant. So both of these trials for quadruplets have compared quadruplet with anti-CD38 antibody with a VRd backbone, right, compared to VRd. But many of us would argue that VRd is probably not many of our preferred regimens. We use it in some patients, but many of us use DRd based on the Maya results. So how do we now compare it to DRd? And I think this is where I would congratulate the IFM group here and Dr. Mothi and his group, where they compared it to DRd backbone. So the BENEFIT trial that was presented at ASCO last year and subsequently published looks at the question, does a proteasome inhibitor with bortezomib add benefit in addition to anti-CD38 monoclonal antibody and Len-Dex? As we would say, the anti-CD38 antibody with Len-Dex is most of our standard of care for our practice. So this is the BENEFIT trial. This is an IFM trial in which patients who were 65 to 79 years of age were randomized 1:1 to get an isatuximab VRd quadruplet versus isa-Len-Dex, so anti-CD38 triplet. And then these patients had induction cycles. Then there was bortezomib was stopped after a while, starting cycle 19. They were just continued on isa-Len in both of the treatment arms. And these were 270 patients that were randomized. So 18 cycles of bortezomib, and the primary endpoint was MRD, and patients continued until progression. So this is the patient population. The median age was 73 to 74 years of age. You know, a significant number, only about 20% were under the age of 70. So this is truly transplant ineligible. 80% of patients were above the age of 70. And this is the primary endpoint, the MRD. The primary endpoint was MRD 10 to the power minus 5, which was significantly higher, 53% versus 26% in the ESA-RD arm. So 18 months of bortezomib did add benefit in getting more MRD negativity. Now, if you look at deeper MRD negativity at 10 to the power minus 6, that was also higher in the quadruplet arm, and the MRD negative CR rate was also higher in the quadruplet arm. I think we all want to know what the PFS is and if there will be difference, but the median follow-up is only 2 years, and the PFS, I think, is immature to see if there will be a longer-term PFS benefit. Again, with the Len-Dex, the median PFS is about 5 years, and here the follow-up is only about 2 years. So I think we will need longer follow-up from this trial to see if this translates into a PFS benefit. So when we look at safety, there were higher risk of grade 3 thrombocytopenia and higher risk of grade 2 or higher infections with ESA-VRd. Again, this is adding bortezomib for additional of 18 months compared to the ESA-RD triplet here. But we do see that there is a benefit with deeper MRD negativity, but time will tell if this translates into a PFS benefit. Historically, every time we have seen an MRD benefit, especially sustained MRD, we have seen a PFS benefit in previous trials. So we have different triplets. We also have an ongoing trial that compares Len-Dex to VRd because we've never had a head-to-head trial that compares VRd to DRd. And this is the SWOG 2209 trial that is open to accrual. So for those of you that are watching from the United States, this is a trial that you might want to open at your sites. And it's a 2:1 randomization. There are different Dara arms, one that continues just Len maintenance and the other that continues both Dara and Len maintenance. And that's also a question that comes up in clinical practice. After a few cycles of induction, 8 to 9 months, do we continue Dara Len or do we just continue Len or just Dara? So to summarize, right, we've had historical trials with SWOG 777, then Maya that established triplets as the standard of care, starting with VRd and then with DRd. And now we have the era of quadruplets. I will note one thing though, right? We cannot always compare trials across different decades because the VRd and RD, if you see the PFS in the SWOG trial, the PFS with VRd was 41 months. If you look at the IMROS trial, The PFS is a little bit different with VRD. It's 54 months. So already you see a 1 year improvement in PFS with the VRD. Again, we have better supportive care. We know a lot better how to manage complications, and the era has changed, and maybe the populations are slightly different. But overall, you see that the response rates are much deeper with the quadruplets. Long-term PFS, I think, remains to be determined, but the 5-year PFS and the 6-year PFS is much deeper with the quadruplets as well. So to summarize, triplets are an established standard of care, but we now have approvals with quadruplets as well. And I personally would think patients who are fit, I would encourage using a quadruplets with a better PFS and also the better MRD negativity rate that may be important in short term for these patients. And there are some safety trade-offs with the quadruplets that we do need to keep in mind.
Thanks for listening to this podcast. For more information on this topic, click on the link in the podcast description. To earn credit for participating in this podcast, please follow the instructions on how to receive credit information in the episode description.